Chapter 25. At Any Cost.
"Firing!" yelled Rita, and the explosive report of her shotgun rattled the corridor, hurting Vidaya's ears. The forwardmost deckhand spun, smashed into the wall with half his torso missing. The shotgun's muzzle flare lit up the rest, who had donned makeshift scare masks painted with strange sigils. From behind her, Vidaya heard the younger armsman, Geron, shout out, "Here too!" The staccato blurt of an auto-carbine sounded like an angry insect swarm, as the two armsmen effectively swapped places and the corporal strafed the corridor. A muted cry, a grunt of pain. Another attacker went down. Shots came back at them, stubber rounds that went wild or lodged in heavy carapace armour but couldn't penetrate. Vidaya saw blades and cutters brandished in the noisy, fractured light of the fire exchange. She also counted five deckhands in front, and a quick glance revealed three more behind. Rita blasted another, before letting her shotgun fall loose on its strap and reaching for the power maul tethered at her belt, as the fight swiftly moved to close quarters. At the back, Geront had already emptied his ammunition clip and switched to a combat knife. Five remained, revealed in the energy dispersion field of Rita's maul. Three in front and two behind. Vidaya shot one through the top of the skull, scalping and trepanning the deckhand, who fell back in a smoking heap. She was about to turn, as Rita was engaging the other two, when she felt a massive weight bear her down. Flailing, Vidaya lost her grip on the pistol, which went skittering off out of sight and out of reach. Her cane flew sideways, as her bad leg buckled underneath her. Hot, stagnant breath washed over her face. A burly hand pressed her shoulder down with considerable strength. She half-turned, as much as she was able, with her attacker on top of her. Geront staggered, empty-handed, struggling to breathe with a length of chain wrapped around his neck, and a female deckhand on his back and pulling hard at the rusted links. Vidaya's attacker was bigger, much bigger, almost certainly male, despite the ragged anonymity of his leather mask. He had a knife. Serrated, made for filleting. As he stabbed down with it, Vidaya realized the mask wasn't leather, and the meat he used that knife on was probably not animal either.
"Long pig!"
he murmured, sweaty eyes wide with cannibalistic hunger. The blade didn't make the cut. It stopped short, instantly blunted as it struck Vidaya's outstretched arm. A bloodshot, red-rimmed gaze regarded the augmented arm and the knife dully. Vidaya used the distraction to bring her knee up into her attacker's groin. He squeaked in pain, and she heard teeth clench. Then she punched a hole through his chest with her fist, and that was that. She had managed to roll the burly cultist aside, his weight in death even more considerable, and was about to try to help Geront when a shot rang out and the female chain-wielder snapped back. Her forehead cored through with a perfectly cauterized hole. Breathing hard, Vidaya looked up to see Rita, her concern for the younger man obvious as he retched on his hands and knees.
"This is yours, I believe, ma'am," she said, handing the still-smoking lasgun back to its owner, grip first. "Damn fine weapon."
"It is," said Vidaya, catching her breath at last
and tamping down the sudden fear that came in the wake of spent adrenaline.
"You keep it. I'd say you earned it. If you could retrieve my cane, though, I'd appreciate it," she added, picking up the journal she had dropped when she'd drawn the pistol.
Rita obliged, returning the cane as the lights fizzed on again.
"Is he all right?"
Vidaya asked of Geront, who had yet to regain his feet. The corporal slowly nodded, getting up gingerly and rubbing his neck as he stooped to retrieve his auto-carbine.
"He'll be fine," Rita answered, though her gaze lingered on Geront, and Vidaya thought she saw concern in those hard eyes of hers. "What about you?"
"I feel physically sick, but am otherwise unscathed,"
she nodded her appreciation.
"Thanks to the two of you, I owe you my life."
"Ours would not have been worth living if we'd let anything happen to you," Rita replied.
Geront dragged the mask off the larger man who had tackled Vidaya.
"This is a crew mark," he said. "Lower deck, aft.
He's not Colt.
Rita looked on with distaste.
Well, he is now. Who can we trust anymore? I say each other.
Vedea eyed the corridor ahead, lighter now, but not without its shadows and alcoves.
Is it safe to go on? I have no idea, Mum,
said Rita honestly.
I thought this zone had been cleared.
She got on the vox, but cut the link when an ultramarine appeared at the end of the corridor. He removed his helmet to reveal a youthful face with dark, inquisitive eyes.
Apologies, Madame Vedea, he said, raising his voice as he approached the group. I hope you are unhurt.
Were it not for Anna and Vanko here, I would not have been.
I'm here to escort you the rest of the way, Sergeant Varelanus.
He paid little attention to the armsman.
Did Sicaria send you?
Varelanus nodded.
Do you have a first name?
He paused for a second, momentarily wrong-footed.
Scipio.
Now it was Vedea's turn to nod.
Very well, Scipio. You, I, and Anna and Vanko are headed to the Ultima Hall together.
Varelanus briefly glanced at the armsman.
I assure you, I can see to your protection.
Nonetheless.
Rita made a protest.
There really is no need, Mom. We can return to trust Anna. You saved my life.
Varelanus tried to hide a frown.
As you wish, but stay close to me.
The ship remains unsafe.
It is still being determined,
he said, eyeing the armsman with suspicion.
As I said, Scipio, said Vedea as she caught his look, I trust them.
Attacks have come from within, he explained. Prolonged exposure to the warp can have a degrading effect upon the human mind, and we have been amongst the tides for a long time.
And you do not consider yourself human?
I did not mean...
Varelanus gave a small sigh.
Are you ready to depart?
Vedea nodded.
Please, lead on.
The Ultima Hall echoed emptily, like a choir bereft of voices. Banners hung from its vaulted ceiling, still and faded. It had a sepulchral quality. Even the air tasted old and dead. A statue of Gilliman stood proudly, though, a massive plinth, raising it so high that you had to arch your neck to meet the Primarch's gimlet eye. It had been wrought with Iaxian marble, Gilliman in the form of the warrior statesman, armoured but unarmed, a cloak hanging about his shoulders and a senator's wreath crowning his head. One foot rested upon some nondescript rock, a strange affectation of many an imperial sculptor, and ever the artistic fashion. It gave him a pioneering, redoubtable aura that Vedea found some comfort in. The light was faint, and the low lumens cast lonely shadows upon the few that mustered here. Sicarius regarded them all, standing at the foot of the great statue, every inch the ultramarian paragon that his father was. He had his lions to his right hand, Dacius, his eye patch giving him a roguish air, Venatio, clad in the white of the apothecarian, and Vandius, ill at ease without the company banner in his hand. There were the only three left, now that Gaius Prebian had fallen. Vedea knew them by appearance, if not name. Sicarius spoke of them often, as a father might his sons, or a brother his closest siblings. To his left was a warrior Vedea did not recognise, but knew he must be Argo Helicus, commander of the Ultramarines Primaris contingent. He looked majestic in his fine armour, but could cast no shade on the Knight of Talasar. Here, even in this hall of heroes, Sicarius was peerless. Sadly, his warrior vassals were few. Of the century and more Ultramarines who began this voyage aboard the Emperor's will, barely half remained. Far from the proud and uniform force that had set out on the crusade, a piecemeal body of men now stood in that place. Not all wore power armour, and even those that did had patched and battered warplate. The hum of generators barely raised an utterance as the warp siphon took its toll. Of the warriors standing in that hall, few were fully equipped, and a mixture of training cuirass and half-plate could be seen amongst the blue Aquila, Tacticus and Gravis armour. Sicarius wore his suzerain's mantle, though the cloak had been torn from fighting the beast. It hung a little raggedly now, a flag at half-mast. He met Vedea's eye, giving the slightest nod of recognition. If he thought anything of the two mortal armsmen who attended her, he offered no sign of it.
"No more long speeches," he said, his ice-blue gaze taking in the meagre crowd. "We are badly blooded and stand upon the brink. We can no longer remain in the warp and must break free of it."
He looked to the battered figure of his Tekmarine, a bloody splash of red in the spattering of blue. Vedea noticed he shuffled uncomfortably, as if carrying an injury. She also realized his armor's generator was missing, and could only imagine the heft of his unaugmented warplate.
"Hephaestus has bought us all the time he can. There is none left after this, so we must leave." "My lord, how?"
asked a sergeant in full plate. He had a hard face, as if carved from stone, with a flat nose and square-edged features. His right arm, Vedea noticed, was a bionic.
"Narcadron is dead. May Hera have mercy. And our navigator has been returned to us, Fenian."
Now, Sicarius glanced over at the armsmen, just a fleeting moment of regard, and Vedea realized these two must have been the ones responsible for retrieving Barthas from his sanctum. She had heard that had been a bad business, with many lives lost. Vedea regarded Rita and Geraint with renewed respect. It took a strong will to keep your sanity after something like that.
"The navigator will serve, and Apothecary Venatio has given assurance he is physically up to the strain." "Then our hopes rest on this creature," said another warrior,
much taller and wider than the one Sicarius had called Fenian. He was a Primaris Marine, and wore arrogance as casually as a cloak. No armour, this one, barring a cuirass, and he clenched the haft of a spear with imperious disdain.
"Not a creature, Pilium, one of us. He is crew. Barthas will breach the confinement of the warp, or we will all perish. It is a dangerous course, not taken lightly. We are few, but we must protect this ship, for have no doubt that when we attempt this feat, and we will attempt it, the hosts of hell will come for us." "And what of his mind?" asked Pilium. "Is he fit for the mental rigours? Words have been spoken against it." "My words are all you need to listen to, brother,"
Sicarius replied with a measure of steel in his voice. Pilium backed down at once, the change obvious even in his subtle body language.
"This must be done. There is simply no other choice. We shall protect this ship and this crew. It is all that matters now. We must survive. We must go on, and we shall. At any cost. Measures will be taken. Defences readied. After that, we break warp and embrace our fate."
The hall fell silent, all within determined to do their duty. Vedea saw it in their eyes, in their postures. These men would die for him, and he for them. That was fortunate, then, for death was close. She felt it in her bones as she closed her book, leaving the last pages unfilled.